You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. Join me as we uncover the rich histories of North America's Great Plains, exploring the latest archaeological discoveries and past cultures that shaped this storied region. Welcome to the podcast.
Good evening. Welcome to episode 38 of the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. I'm thrilled and excited to have you join me on this journey through the rich and fascinating history of North America's Great Plains. I'm your host, Professor Carlton Shield Chief Gover. I think I probably already said that. I'm tired, very tired. And I want to acknowledge the audio tonight might be a little off. I am recording from a hotel room in Newtown, North Dakota. And you might be wondering, Carlton recording from a hotel room in North Dakota. And that deals with it. Things get crazy at the university. I had a spring break. And I am fortunate that I was able to, through work, visit my Arikara relatives at the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation in central North Dakota. So that's why I'm here. I've been here for a couple days. I'm leaving. We're recording this on Friday, March 13th, and I'm heading back to Lawrence on the 14th. And I've just been privileged to have been able to come up to Fort Berthold for work and visit with my northern relatives. And I've had a very good trip. And so I wasn't able to record before I left just because of how crazy things have been at the University of Kansas recently with a NACPR summit we had earlier in the week. And then just like, you know, spring break craziness coming up. And so I was thinking about, you know, what would be a good episode, you know, coming off of some myths this past month and these past two episodes and, you know, being up here with the Mandan and Hidatsa. I kind of wanted to talk about them and just kind of some of the amazing things I've got to experience these past couple of days, you know, get to witness. And so, you know, the Fort Berthold Reservation is the home of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara, often referred to as the three affiliated tribes. Now, we've talked about them a little bit before, and, you know, they're three tribes brought together as one, and they've gone through a lot, these three tribes. Now, when I refer to them as my northern relatives, I'm specifically speaking about the Arikara. The Arikara are Caddoan speakers. They're really close to the Pawnee. In particular, the Arikara were really close to the Skeedy Band, which is what I am, the Skeedy Band of Pawnee. And so we see them as our relatives, and they still see us as relatives. The Mandan and Hidatsa, though, whereas the Arikara are Caddoan speakers, the Hidatsas and Mandans are Siouan speakers. Now, not Siouan like Lakota, Dakota, or Nakota. They speak a different dialect of Siouan. And so, like, you know, the Siouan language is large, and many tribes are, you know, belong to those Siouan language, macro Siouan languages. And, you know, it's really close with Crow. So Crows, Mandans, Hidatsas related. And I think the Hidatsas in particular are more so connected with the Crow tribe. But you'd have to check me on that. Right. So it doesn't really share much with the Lakota language, but that's totally fine. And so these are also Earth Lodge people. Their Earth Lodges are different than Pawnee Earth Lodges. And there's some amazing examples of their history as Earth Lodge people who grew corn, beans, and squash, an incredible archaeological site where you can see where all three tribes were grouped as one in the 19th century, like, you know, like late 19th century. These tribes were hit in particular by epidemics, including smallpox, of course. And there's these accounts of like the U.S. government trying to bring vaccines to the Mandans, Hidatsas, and Arikara. And because of Lakota raiding parties and making war on the United States, they weren't able to get those vaccines up here. And so these folks were really hit. And to protect themselves, because you can see violence in the archaeological record between ancestral Mandans, Hidatsas, and Arikaras. Like archaeologically, the Arikaras belong to the coalescent tradition. So like same as the Pawnees, you know, the coming out of woodland groups into the Central Plains tradition. And from Central Plains tradition, you get initial coalescent variant and then extended. And the Mandans and Adatsas share ancestry with Oniotas, the Oniota archaeological culture, local woodland groups, and the Dakotas, particularly the Mandans. I believe there's a relationship with Great Oasis. But really, they're the initial Middle Missourians that come out of the Middle Missouri tradition. And so these groups have been there for a very long time, right? Like in terms of antiquity, Mandans, Adatsas, Pawnees, Arikaras, Wichitas, Kiowas, Kichai have been in the Missouri River area and down into Texas longer than the vast majority of tribes. And we can see that, especially within the past 2,000 years, as from woodland traditions, people begin to domesticate crops through horticulture and then full-blown agriculture and live in these large towns of thousands of people, fortified earth-lodged towns with multiple ditches, palisades, you know, like with an extensive burial record out here. It is impossible to dispute the antiquity of Mandans, Adatsas, Arikaras in the Dakotas, in Nebraska for the past 2,000 years. And so the site that, you know, were these once very large nations live in one town to defend themselves, because there's only like a couple thousand, it's called like a fish hook village. And what's cool about it, from an archaeological perspective, is you can see neighborhoods. Just because the three tribes were living together and they, you know, they all had earth lodges, that doesn't mean the earth lodges were the same. And what was really neat, I got to visit the interpretive center today, and the MHA folks know which families lived in which earth lodge. And that's just incredible, right? Because smallpox, you know, there was an outbreak in the 1830s that decimated a lot of us. And so by 1845, MHA gets together to form like a fish hook village. And it was also a trade center with the Americans. So there's also a mix of like cabins there. And, you know, that's where a lot of this some of this historical documentation comes into play, where they know which families and which people have been which lodges. But archaeologically, you can also see these different neighborhoods where you can tell where the Mandans were, where the Hidatsas were, and the Arikaras were. And it just shows how prosperous those groups were in the face of adversity, right? And the Arikara, so I think the town itself got its name because of the bend, because of where this town was located on the bend of the Missouri River to look like a fish hook. Initially settled by Hidatsas, followed by some Mandan, and then more Mandan joined. And then by 1862, the Arikara joined them. And the Arikara used to have a lot of clans too. Like they still have some clan systems. I don't know about Mandan, and part of that I need to be better about is I don't know Mandans and Hidatsas culturally, or really that Middle Missouri tradition as well. Like I can speak to Arikara history a bit because it's so intertwined with Pawnee history. And right, and the Arikaras split off from the Pawnees, from the Skeety Pawnee, by like the 12, 1300s AD, and just start making their way north. And we can look at places where there's, you know, violence between Mandans and Hidatsas and Arikaras, like at Crow Creek. And, you know, and even though the Mandans, Hidatsas, and Arikaras are alive today, like they still face hardship. And so, and I guess we'll talk more about that in the second segment. But from an archaeological perspective, and I know I'm just kind of rambling, part of it's just being tired. And I'll talk about some reasons why I'm tired in this next segment. It's just been some long days since being up here. Is, you know, you can look at the pottery, the differences between those two different groups, that even though they're in the same, or, you know, they're living, quote unquote, the same house, but the architecture is different and the way they're building their earth lodges is different. And so the whole Missouri River north of, I mean, hell, down even into Missouri, right? Like tribes like the Iowas, the Kaws, Omahas, Poncas, they learn how to make earth lodges from Mandans, Adansas, Pawnees, or Ricaras. Like that is a dwelling that is indigenous or native to the Great Plains. And as other groups move eastwards during different times, in order to live in Tornado Alley, you have to have earth lodges. And so it becomes this distinct marker of what does like plains, what do plains houses look like? It's the earth lodge. So yeah, like a fishhook village, an incredible archaeological site you can find. There's a fun little volume on it. And it's this amazing window into the past that also includes like, you know, a lot of Euro-American accounts as well. And, you know, Sacagawea or Sacagawea is, you know, was with the Mandan, is Mandan. There's debate as if she's Mandan or Shoshone. Like I've heard both, none of my business. And, you know, I just totally spaced out. What was I talking about? I don't know. We'll be back after these messages. We're going to enjoy part two. And welcome back to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. And so I know that was a little bit of a rambly first segment, talking about just like brief history. I'm gonna have Alan Demaray, the TIPO for MHA, as a guest, and we can talk more specifically about MHA Nation, but just try to set the scene. And so I was up here visiting Port Butthole for work, and from a museum perspective, and I can't tell you how welcoming my relatives have been up here. And my first day, you know, I got in, we had dinner, and they invited me to a buffalo hunt the next day. So yesterday, we got up and drove up to White Shield, where the Ricker are hanging out, and I got to meet more of the language, Ricker language guys. And so today, like a lot of, you know, MHA used to be, you know, three different, you know, nations, but you know, over the past 100 years, a lot of people have intermarried. So like most MHA folks are all three, right? And so they all kind of know Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara. And it's like a really, it's really cool to see. And so these kids, and I shouldn't say kids, these young adults, were doing this culture program. And so the Arikara have, MHA itself has this like big old bison herd. They have two of them. They also have an elk herd. And so they have these like bison ranchers, they have all these acres. So the Fort Berthold Reservation is almost 1 million acres. And a little over half is owned by tribal members. You know, they got allotted like all the other tribes, because God forbid, you know, we got to do what we wanted with our reservations. And so we got to, I was invited to be part of this bison hunt and be with the kids. And the whole purpose of this was to teach them about the bison, what they mean to the Arikara, and like learn how to field dress and process a bison. And so like, of course, you know, as I'm getting driven out there and I'm talking and visiting with my relatives, you know, I open my loud mouth about doing that bison experiment with Dr. Devin Pettigrew, where we like used atlatls and did that ballistics experiment, and then but then processed the bison using stone cools, and I thought that was really cool. But they have this really gorgeous facility, and their reservation is just absolutely beautiful. And the bison was hunted, and just the one, it was a bull, and they were just incredible about it. And they're showing the students how to field dress the bison, and they put it on a pickup truck and brought it into this processing garage to field dress it. And explain to all the kids, all the young adults, the different parts of the bison, like how to field dress. And not just like, you know, in the sense of where to cut, but showing them how to be careful about it, which organs can be used, how they were used, explaining all the parts of the bison, how they could have been used or how they could be used, right? Because we used all the parts of the bison. And then from there, once it was field dressed, because you need to let that body heat out, because like those animals, if you, even after they're dead and you don't field dress them and let their natural heat expand, like you're going to spoil meat. And so once it was field dressed, then they took the bison to another facility where they had tables and then showed the kids how to process the bison. And it was cool. Like a bunch of people got in, like these were young adults, and they had, it seemed like they had a good time, and they were super helpful. And someone brought a grill, and as we were processing the bison, they were grilling up bison steaks at the same time. It was just awesome, and I'm so thankful to have been a part of it and get to meet these cultural folks, their language guys, share some stories and also just like work with the kids. This is my third bison I've processed, which I don't think is a lot, but I guess it can be for some people. There's still some things I don't know. Like I still don't know how to take the tongue out, but anyway. And then went and had dinner with some colleagues up here and got to share stories and visit. And then today I got to go to their cultural center and see that they have an Earth Lodge village. They have a couple of them. And they even have tribal housing. And that's shaped like Earth Lodges. That's just so cool. And I haven't seen, for me, the Earth Lodge village that they have here. So I've seen a couple. I mean, all of them, what's so meaningful is like, I'm used to seeing like one or two, like one Earth Lodge by itself. It's like, this is the house that we used to live in. And at their interpretive center, there's like six or seven where they host culture camp. They have scaffolds. They have this giant Earth Lodge with the concrete floor. And there's offices in there. It's like a mini museum. And, you know, as I'm meeting folks and being introduced as, you know, this is, you know, it wasn't, this is Dr. Carlton Shield, Chief Grover from the University of Kansas. Like, oh, this is Carlton from the Pawnee Nation, our relative. Like, you know, me being an archaeologist, museum professional was never mentioned. It's like, this is Carlton Shield, Chief Grover from Pawnee Nation. And how excited people were or appeared to be. And those that have been to Pawnee and have Pawnee relatives, like, it was just incredible. And to hear how they have this culture camp where the kids over the summer like are staying in these Earth Lodges was just, you know, it made my heart feel very happy and really aspired, like that I hope that one day my nation can have something like that for ourselves. So yeah, it was like really cool. And their interpretive center has like a fair bit of archaeology in there, has all the ancestral sites, has the archaeological record, it talks about Oneota and Woodland period. It talks about Clovis caches and has these objects on display. And to see all these things right there, you know, there's not many places where I've been like just blown away by a tribe's interpretive center. But like MHA really knocked it out of the park with this one. And this is the second one they built. They had a previous museum after the first oil boom, and a woman, as it was told to me, like built it, funded it herself with that oil revenue. Just incredible, incredible. And it makes sense. And I'm really excited to come back in the summer for White Shield Powwow. But there's still that connection between the Rikras and the Pawnees, and still that relationship where that's not forgotten. We've been doing visitation. And I think I've talked about it on this podcast before about how close the Pawnees and Rikras were. But this is my first time up here to Fort Berthold. Like, I've always heard about it. I've always wanted to come up here and to come up solo and just be welcomed so incredibly by my relatives has just been a phenomenal experience. And so I'm excited to have Alan hopefully join us on the show to talk about people and their culture. Alan's all three. And so yeah, I think this is a much shorter episode than usual. I am exhausted. I just needed to get something up. I know this is a little bit of a teaser, but like if you have the chance, like I'm going to put the link down below for MHA's website. They have a radio channel. They have a radio show. And some other things about Menendez and Dotson's Rikras and some resources on like a Fishhook Village. I appreciate your patience, everybody. And yes, I listened to last week's episode or last episode too, and like I didn't realize just how bad the mint sounded. Like I knew it was going to be annoying, but even when I listened to that last episode when it came out, I don't know how Chris and Rachel didn't shoot me or like send me a nasty email, because I listened to that episode and I could barely listen to it by all the mouth noises. I apologize. It will never happen again. As you guys can tell, I do not have gum in. I don't have mints in. I am just speaking. I learned my lesson. I hope I didn't lose too many followers from that. I appreciate the emails and how constructive they were. Knowing there's some times with the Life and Ruins that we'd get just nasty emails, especially when I was like really gaining weight and like, you know, some of my heavy breathing or the way that I was breathing. And I remember a really nasty email I got once about that. And there was definitely a way they could have softened the tone. And it was just so rude. But anyways, I'm going to have someone from MHA be on the show and talk more fully about these folks, my relatives up here, and get a cider or two involved. No, I'm sorry. It is like almost 10 o'clock, guys. And I am bushwhacked even today. I had a very full day. So I'm not going to take up too much of your guys' time. I apologize. I want to thank you all for the emails. I look forward to you guys next time. And once again, if you guys have anything you want to listen to or any archaeology you think I should cover, feel free to give me an email. You guys enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Pawnee_archaeologist, and you can also email me at greatplainsarcpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, anybody can love the mountains, but it takes a soul to love the prairie. American author Willa Cather.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.